Hello and welcome to a special episode of B-Side Ourselves. It's kind of a B-side of B-Side Ourselves, a one-off. I'm here with my amazing Aunt Nikki to talk about the new Taylor Swift. Oh, what is the long name?
The Tortured Poets.
Is that it? Society?
Why can I not remember? It's a long title. No, that's right.
The Tortured Poets Department.
The anthology.
Yes, because we go all in.
Which has not only a B-side, but also a C and D side.
Yes. It's like, what, 31? 31 songs. That's correct.
The opposite of 13.
So we're not going to go into detail about all these songs because there's 31 songs, but we will give our opinions. And the most exciting part about doing this with Nikki is she's become a mega fan. Yes. Just like I was a pretty big fan, and then she pushed me up into the next level. But she knows a lot. She likes to delve into the internet.
I do like the internet. A mega fan is a good term for me because I would not consider myself a Swiftie because I have not been a fan of Taylor Swift for very long.
Yes.
But once I was in, I was in.
When did you start?
What's
your Swift history?
Well, I really liked Midnights a lot, and I feel like that album got me into Taylor Swift because I liked the sound of it more than I liked her more like lyrically based piano and guitar and country history.
It's going to be interesting because I feel like we're going to have different opinions on this album, and it's a lot of guitar and country and piano based
ish.
Right, let's get into it.
Great.
So the first song is Fortnite featuring Posty Malone.
Posty Malone.
I love Post Malone.
And for part of the video, he's Pre Malone.
Oh, Pre Malone.
No tattoos.
And she becomes Post Swift.
She does.
All right. So, I mean, I'll give my quick thoughts on this. I think it's an absolute banger. I liked it before. And when we watched the music video, I went home and watched it a few more times even. Yeah. I really like this one. And Posty adds a really fun flair and contradiction to her vocal styling.
Yeah, I don't so much know that it's a contradiction as much as it like they really play on each other in a nice way. I really like the harmonies that they did together. He uses a lot of what do you call it? The auto-tune in his songs, and it just works perfectly in this one.
Yeah, I guess not contradiction. They're both crooners.
Yes.
They're both crooners. Yeah. Any fun facts about this song?
I don't know that I really have fun facts. I really enjoy this song a lot because it sounds to me a lot like she is kind of thinking about what her life would be like had she, you know, gone down this path with Joe Alwyn, who, as people know, she was in a relationship with for about 6 years, and he really wanted to stay out of the spotlight and have this sort of normal life. And so when she talks about, you know, being good neighbors and seeing him at the mailbox, and there's a line in the song that says, "Your wife waters flowers. I want to kill her." And I take that really personally because I am a wife that waters flowers.
Someone out there wants to kill you.
So, well, maybe there's a part of me that wants to kill that part of myself, too.
Oh, shit.
So I don't know. I connect with that a lot. And then I really love the fact that she allowed Post Malone to have her most iconic part of any song, which is the bridge. And that's right at the end of the song. And if you remember when we were watching the music video, I was like, my hands up, swaying in the air. Like, it's just it's such a good ending to the song that you just want to sing along with.
It's true. God, what was I about to say? So I watched a lot of TikToks. So like, husband's like, "Are you okay?" And the woman's all crying. He's like, "I'm just going through a lot of emotions and feelings and thinking about my whole life now listening to Taylor Swift." Did you go through that?
I did not go through that. I did not go through that in the same way that I went through that when I listened to Red for the first time.
Oh,
okay. This whole album, and this isn't specifically about Fortnite, but this whole album made me just really feel for her. And I feel like that was sort of the point of the album. Like, she wanted to put everything out there that she had been through over the last couple of years. So I felt really tortured about that.
I saw a review online where the guy was like, "This is like the epitome of like, woe is me, sad, care about me music." I'm like, her music's kind of always been like that. She writes about her life experience.
Yeah.
All right. We stayed too long on track one.
Okay.
Track two, The Tortured Poets Department.
Okay.
All right, so I wrote, you're in self-sabotage mode, throwing spikes down the road. This one I didn't love on the first listen to, but might be one of my favorite songs on the first half of this album now. I know you have contradicting ending.
Well, sort of. So it grew on me after some time, like the actual song. I think that when I had first listened to it, I knew that it was about Matty Healy, and it really pissed me off, quite frankly, that he got the title track of this album, because I just really don't care for what I know about him. And the other thing that I didn't like about this particular song, there's a lot of name dropping that happens in this song. You know, she talks about, Patti Smith and, another person in the Chelsea Hotel, and like just saying that we're just idiots. Like, we don't really mean anything in the larger scheme of things. But then talking about Charlie Puth and Lucy and Jack, like, it was too much.
We were talking about that during the music video. I said typewriter is going to be huge now. Like, all the Swifties are going to go out and buy like old black typewriters. But is it Charlie Puth, or she's like, Charlie Puth should be bigger than he is?
Yes.
Like, I feel like I don't even know who that is.
I changed the lyric to Carly Rae Jepsen.
Should be bigger than she is. Fair enough. But I feel like Charlie Puth's about to get a huge push in sales, whatever he does. Art.
Maybe. But that lyric on like a third and fourth listen, I think, is more about them getting really high and then talking about that and laughing about it, which, you know, is probably deserved for Charlie Puth.
All right, track three, my favorite boy breaks his favorite toys. All right, so my opinion, this one did not grow on me. This is one I did not love. The lyrics in this are, the lyrics are not great to me, and the contribution by Jack Antonoff is really annoying. His synth pop song was like, I don't know, it's just so repetitive, and the woes didn't get to me. I don't know, I did not like this song.
Okay. This one I really liked. It actually a little bit sounds like, oh gosh, there's this song called Toy Soldier by Marishka from like forever ago. And it reminds me a little bit of that, because it's about toy soldiers, obviously. So the beat of it was kind of sounds like an army marching, which I thought was cool. Cause then you just kind of picture like this little kid playing with toys and breaking all their favorite ones. And that's just what happens. You get into a relationship and you get so like engrossed with a person, and you're just like really into it and really into them, and you just throw it all away because it's just too intense for you. So that's what I think the lyrics are about, but I really like the beat of it. I like the whole sound. I mean, I'm not the person to talk to about synth pop, because it's probably my favorite genre of music altogether.
I like synth pop too. I just feel like you're gonna see this a lot on the first half of the album. Yes. There's a lot of songs. Yes. I feel like the synth and the drum bass and everything background wise just sounds very similar to the song before it, and it's not doing her any favors with how powerful she's being. But that's just my opinion.
I agree. I mean, I said to you at one point that I felt like this was a Bleachers album.
Yes. And there's a few songs that really stand out as like, oh, this is a Bleachers song.
And I don't disagree with that. And there's been a lot of narrative online about her being held back by Jack. But I think if she enjoys it and she's leaning into it, then I think we have to support that.
All right, track four. I never done the name of this one. Wow, way to go, Danny. Down Bad. This one was a weird Bleachers feel to me. I'm still unsure if I like it or not. Like, I listen to it and I keep going back and forth on it. I feel like it might need more than just a repetitive drum beat. That one really got to me, because there's nothing special going on in the background. But it's not terrible. Like, I actually do like her lyrics in the song. I think the backing track is what's really killing me, the producing on that song.
I think that's fair. I also didn't connect to this song very much at all. Lyrically, it's not interesting. I mean, you said that about the last one, but I think that that applies here for sure. Honestly, I haven't listened to Down Bad very much, because again, like, it's just not one that I'm going to put on repeat right now.
I know. I kind of want to go through, because there's 31 songs.
Yep.
Make a playlist of my favorite songs. Yeah. And be like, this is the Torture Poet Department.
Sure. Yep.
All right. Track five. So Long, London. I don't think anyone questions how much sad you have, Taylor. That's my first note, because she's like, you didn't know how much sad I had. Yeah. Come on, Taylor.
Yeah.
The song is so emo. If it was done by a whiny white dude back in the early 2000s, it would hit. It references London, two guns in a grave, ships. Like, this is a Hot Topic song, but it's done by Taylor Swift.
Oh no.
And I actually don't mind it.
Not Hot Topic. Okay, so we know that track fives on Taylor Swift albums are usually the most important to her, or tell the most about something significant that she's gone through. And this is certainly no exception. The beginning of this song, when she's got all the harmonies going on, they kind of sound like church bells to me.
They do.
Which then when the beat drops, it just kind of breaks your heart because you know that something bad is coming, essentially. But I think that she got as personal as possible in this song. The thing that really strikes me about how much sad Taylor has in this song is there's so many points where you can tell that she's like almost breaking down.
Yeah.
She sings specifically about stealing all of her youth and stealing it for free. And she kind of breaks down during that part. And that's essentially true for her relationship with Joe, who she moved to London for some time, because, you know, she was with him when she was in her late 20s. I think they got together when she was like 27 or 28. And that's a pretty impactful time to just steal for a relationship that is just going to fade out.
So this is about Joe?
Yeah.
Okay. I just making sure. Mm-hmm. I know you know the more details.
I do know the lore.
All right. So track six, But Daddy, I Love Him.
Oh, I love this song. So be careful. I know you do.
This song gives me early Taylor vibes, which is why I don't think I like it as much. Okay. It reminds me of Fearless era, maybe early Red or some of the Red songs. It's not a bad song, but it's not a song I'm a huge fan of. But I know you love it, so give me why you love it so much.
I love this song because it is a journey. I think that there are three very distinct pieces of this song. The first part, she's kind of talking about herself and how people are always coming down on her relationships. The second little part is about how loud all of the Twitter Swifties and the TikTok Swifties, et cetera, came down on her very brief relationship with Maddie Healy from the 1975. And then I would wager a guess that she went back to re-record the last chorus and verse after she met Travis Kelce, because she's talking about how, you know, she's dancing with her dress unbuttoned and she's, you know, screaming, "But Daddy, I love him. But Daddy, I love him." But then at the end she says, my daddy just loves him. And she's got her wild boy and all their wild joy. And we have watched that play out very, very publicly because they're both public figures. But I, as far as like the music goes, I do agree. This is kind of an older Taylor Swift feeling song. It feels very much like maybe State of Grace from Red. Yes. And that brings me a lot of wild joy.
Okay. I loved it.
I was a good person to bring on this podcast.
You were. All right. The next one, track seven, Fresh Out of the Slammer. I am not a fan of this one. Like, we could ever believe you could go to court, like a jury would convict you of anything, Taylor. And then the whole concept of just like her getting out of jail and running to him. And I don't know, I found the song really cheesy.
So this is where the lore kind of helps, because again, her relationship with Joe, she was kept very much out of the spotlight, and he just wanted to have like this quiet life in London, and she didn't want that. So she really felt like she was fresh out of the slammer and she was ready to go and live her life. And I love that for her.
That might actually change my opinion next time I listen to it.
Okay.
I just thought it was like a cheesy, weird little song.
Yeah, it is.
All right. Track eight. Florida. I told you I didn't like it. You said you did like it, and I thought I'd like it after a few more listens. I listened to it three times. I do not like this song.
That's really too bad. Do you like Florence and the Machine?
Yeah, I don't mind Florence and the Machine. Because I don't like Florida.
Sure. I'm sure there will be mixed opinions on a song specifically about the state of Florida. I like this song because it sounds a lot like Florence. Unlike her song with Post Malone, I'm not sure that their voices work very well together. Florence has a very like, how do I want to say this? Like sort of her pitch is kind of all over the place, and she has a lot of vibrato in her voice, and Taylor just doesn't. So I'm not sure if they meld together in the same way, which is why I kind of struggle with this song as well. Now, if it was a Florence and the Machine song, I would be obsessed with it.
It's not actually the singing. I just hate the content. Florida.
So I heard something on iHeartRadio a few days ago that Taylor was actually watching Dateline and thinking about how, like, people just run away to Florida or all these weird things happen to Florida. And we've all seen the Florida Man memes and stuff. So think about that, too, the next time you listen to it.
All right. Track 9, Guilty as Sin. This one is suffering from Antonoff bad. He writes his, and the lyrics are a little weird. Maybe it's just like, there's a song later. I'm going to commend her on how it's poetry and not easily understood, but really good. And this one seems poetry, but also just not very good, in my opinion.
Sure. I don't connect with the song really either. I mean, the song is basically about fantasizing about someone else while you're in a relationship. I don't really like the music myself. I do think that it's really heavy on Jack. And this actually might be the song where I feel like, you know, the concept of him holding her back a little bit is pretty clear.
Yeah. And also the lyric, it just seemed like it's not a bad lyric. It just seems like it should be not Taylor singing it. Like, she could sing a song about fantasizing, love making, whatever. That's fine. But like writing his name on my thigh, but it's only in my mind. And I'm like,
sure.
What is going on here?
Yeah. I mean, certainly on this album, she's got a lot of cringeworthy lyrics. And at first listen, I was like, I don't know about all of this, but, I just think it takes a couple lessons.
All right. Track 10. Who's afraid of little old me? I'm going to have to edit that.
Mic drop.
Stop it. Who's afraid of little old me? All right. So what did I write about this? Taylor, I'd be terrified if I crossed you in any way. So yes, I'm afraid of little old you. I like this song, but its cadence is very similar to so many other songs. This is where I was like, the backbeat is just like every song on this first track. This all
sounds the same.
Yeah. Her vocals usually sound different. Her lyrics are different, but like, she could have sang that over any one of these tracks and it would have worked.
So as is now, I'm sure clear with me, is I pay a lot of attention to the lyrics and what she's actually singing about. And this is a clear song about her journey through the music industry. This is another one that's sort of heartbreaking for me. So the synth pop and like the sadness is just, it's weird. And I think it can take some time for people to kind of reconcile between those two things. So I hear what you're saying, but I do think that it says a lot about where she came from, how she's moved throughout the music industry, and how she hopes to kind of, you know, come out of what she's been through, you know, with all of her re-records and all of that stuff, and really own her whole persona.
I mean, I like the lyrics of the song. I remember that.
Yeah. And at the end, she adds, I think, a line that said, like, she says, "Who's afraid of little old me?" And then she says, "You should be." She's pretty powerful, and somewhat rightfully so. And there probably are some things that we should be scared of.
All right. This one's an interesting one for me. I Can Fix Him, track 11. What I don't like about this, it's not even. All right. You have a million bajillion little girls looking up to you. And I know at the end of the song, you says, "Oh, I can't fix him." Like, that's your last line. Like, oh, maybe I can't fix him. But you are talking about a guy who's tracing a gun along your face in a heart shape and how he's an asshole and just seems like the biggest piece of shit. And you're like, the whole song, you're like, "I can fix him. Don't worry. I got this." And all these little girls are going to look up to that and be like, "I could date a guy like that. I can fix him."
Okay, Danny.
She's influential.
Danny.
No, tell me. Tell me what I'm wrong about.
Oh, sweet summer child. This is a common experience for girls and women. All of us date a man for whether it be a week, months, years, what have you, that we just constantly can try to convince ourselves that we can fix them. It doesn't matter if they're holding a gun to your face and tracing a heart, or if they have a drug problem, or what have you. But we all have that experience regardless of whether or not Taylor Swift is singing about it.
I know, but I feel like she's giving them approval to try and fix them.
Well, maybe that's a girlhood thing that everybody just has to go through.
Okay. Don't be with someone who's tracing a gun along your face.
PSA for the kids out there.
Taylor, at the end of the song, she says, "I can't fix them. Just take that."
She does.
To heart.
She does. That's yeah. This is another song where she changes a line at the very end to be like, you know, I changed my mind about this. And that's pretty common throughout this whole album, both with the actual lyrics and with the songs. Like she's coming to a realization of what's happening in her head.
Yeah. All right. So track 12, LOML. I had to look that up. I didn't know it was Love of My Life.
So speaking of lyrics that change at the end, it was not like through all of the choruses, she sings love of your life, because there's somebody who's like constantly saying, you're the love of my life, you're the love of my life. And then she says, you're the loss of my life. And so, again, this is a lyrical change and the last chorus that cuts pretty deep.
Yeah. I remember my notes were like, this is kind of a boring love song. And my next note, wait, things are changing.
Yeah.
So it does shift pretty quickly in the song.
I love the sound of LOML. I love it. And honestly, it's one of those songs that makes me feel like it's going to be this really beautiful love song. And it's not.
No.
At all. It's all about loss and pain and, you know, somebody promising you something for so long that it's just never really going to come to fruition. But again, the realization at the end is pretty powerful.
I like it. And I think this one's going to grow on me a lot. Like, I think right now I just kind of mid with it, but after I figured out what was happening, I was like, oh
yeah, let it
go on you. All right. This is probably one of my favorite songs on the whole first half, for sure. On the first, but anyway, I Could Do It With a Broken Heart, track 13.
Yes.
I fucking love this song. Like the Camera's Bitch and Smile.
Yes.
This song is fire. It's almost a club banger. It's not, it gets into like club beat towards the end, but whew, I love this song.
Yeah, me too. I think I had texted you that you had to listen to this one because you were kind of looking for like a poppy banger. And this is it. But again, like you listen to the lyrics and it doesn't match what's going on musically at all. And this song made me really look at the Eras Tour movie very, very differently.
Did you watch it again after this?
I didn't, but I was kind of like thinking about, you know, all the live streams that I've watched. And, you know, then when we watched the movie together, and there's so much of the tour that she was doing just absolutely devastated by what was happening in her personal life. And I don't know, like that kind of calls back to, you know, who's afraid of little old me? Well, shit, if you can do this. Can I swear on here?
Yeah.
Okay. Shit. Well, yeah, shit. If you can do what you're doing on that stage and feeling as hurt and as much pain and as tortured as you had been, that is a powerful, powerful person.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you noticed this in the music, but there's a point where they count and there's like a 1, 2, 3, 4 in the background. And somebody pointed out on Twitter that those are likely her cues that she hears when she's on stage because it's offbeat to the song. So it's probably a count in from another song that she's, you know, singing when she's on the tour. But yeah,
that's sick.
The lyric that really struck me the most on this song is, I don't remember the line right before this, but she says with the crowd was chanting more. And I remember when everybody was kind of clowning around about Reputation, Taylor's version coming out, and she had not, like 2 or 3 weeks prior to that, released 1989 Taylor's version. And everybody's just like, we want more, we want more, we want more. And that just really broke my heart for her because she's already working so hard. And sometimes, heard this song with a broken heart, to like constantly demand things of her is part of the reason that I refuse to call myself a Swiftie, because those bitches are psycho.
Whoa, be careful. Swiftie might be listening to this.
That's okay. They can come for me. You didn't say my last name or my phone number. So
I did not. Not yet. I will tell you where she works and her phone number. All right. So the next song, The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived. I just want to know, I don't know if I have an opinion on this song yet, but I want to know, who is this about?
Well, so the internet says that this is another one about Maddie Healy, which some Swifties refer to as Ratty, which I think is really funny. but this is essentially about like getting absolutely love bombed by somebody and then them not following through on any of the promises that they had made to you.
I could see that.
and I mean, I think that this song is like a worse diss track to an ex-boyfriend than Dear John. All Too Well, I mean, is supposed to be like, you know, sort of a diss track toward Jake Gyllenhaal, but I don't really see that song as being as mean as this one. Like,
that's why I want to know who it's about.
She's angry, very, very angry. Yeah. And I don't know if we have just a second. I can tell you a little bit more. So her and Maddie Healy actually got together in 2014 for a very brief period of time. And then she jumped into a couple of other relationships after that and then came back to him eventually. So I think that she was pretty upset when he really couldn't follow through on any of his promises because he had always sort of been in the back of her mind for a really, really long time. And once she was free, fresh out the slammer, however you want to say it, and he was free and ready to jump in, for him just to like treat her like crap, had to have been pretty impactful for her. So this is like, she's angry.
She is pissed.
And I can appreciate it. Yeah.
Track 15, The Alchemy.
I love this song.
All right. I really like the lyrics of this song, but again, Antonoff is killing me. That's all I wrote. His producing is killing me.
Yeah. Well, luckily we're about to get to the Aaron Dessner song.
Yeah. Again, though, I thought the lyrics of the song were really good. It's just,
they are really good. I think it's interesting that she used the term alchemy and not chemistry, because they have the same number of syllables and can essentially mean the same thing. But alchemy is more about like, it's essentially what they called chemistry before chemistry was known as a science. And it's about like changing the matter of things and bringing things to life that you really didn't think were possible. There's a lot of football references in this song. I don't know if you noticed that or not. So I don't know. I think that this is the first Travis song that we hear.
All right. We're finally getting over into the Aaron Dessner era, not era, half of the album.
Oh, okay. Oh, it was right next. Great.
Yes. So, well, not all, because like Black Dog is back to Antonoff. But we'll get to that.
Oh, interesting.
Clara Bow. Finally, Bow. Aaron Bow.
Clara Bow.
Yeah, Clara Bow. Finally, an Aaron Dessner's produced song. You can instantly tell because we can actually hear pianos and a bass guitar driving the background music. It complements Taylor's voice so perfectly in the song. I think it's great.
I agree. This feels like old school Taylor Swift to me. And I love the references in this song. Clara Bow was a 1920s actress that ended up in an insane asylum because the fame was just too much for her to cope with. So, you know, she says, "You look like Clara Bow." Then she says, "You look like Stevie Nicks," who, as hopefully we know, Taylor has been compared to several times. And then eventually goes to, "You look like Taylor Swift." So it's really about like how women move through fame, and that there's always like the next sort of starlet out there. I think it's beautiful. I think it's sung really well. I think the lyrics are great. I really enjoyed this one.
I saw the comparison, like you said, of like Stevie Nicks and then into her. And then I thought it was funny that today on like Instagram, I saw like a Stevie Nicks in the flowy dress spinning picture right next to, and I had like both the lyrics. I'm like, that is the point. They're both in the flowy. Yep.
Yep. Yeah. And I don't wonder if to some extent, you know, Taylor is always sort of hoping to emulate Stevie Nicks in some kind of way. I mean, a lot of the Folklore and Evermore sets during the Eras tour, she's in like these big flowy dresses and spinning around. She's had the allegations of being a witch, which, you know,
are true. There's pictures of her from the 70s or 60s.
Yeah. Oh, of Stevie Nicks?
No, of Taylor Swift.
Oh, of Taylor.
There's like a commercial and it shows a girl that looks exactly like Taylor Swift. Oh. It's from like the 50s.
Oh, that's funny. Anyway, so like I get the comparison for sure. But I also think that there's you know, a need for women to kind of like strike out on their own and do their own thing. And hopefully that happens with the quote unquote next Taylor Swift.
Next. Who's the next Taylor Swift?
I don't know. We'll see.
All right. The next song, The Black Dog. This song references The Starting Line. So that's a good start.
Yes.
I love that band.
You can have the best of me.
Yeah. And then it's like, I was hoping, or is this the kind of music that plays at Black Dog Bar? Is Starting Line the kind of music? So I had big hopes for this song because I thought we were done with Jack Antonoff and I liked the concept of what I was hearing. But then I realized Jack Antonoff did this one again. Mm. And it's fine, but I thought I was going to like this song a lot more. And I think that's why it disappointed me.
But do you feel like your dislike of prior Jack Antonoff produced songs is clouding this one? Because no. This doesn't sound like a Jack Antonoff song to me.
I think that might have clouded this song a little bit. But I mean, didn't he do most of Midnights with her?
Yeah.
And I love Midnights.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just think a lot of these songs sound like Bleacher songs. I think he like took scraps maybe.
Sure.
Of his production with the Bleachers and was like, you know what, Taylor, sing over these.
Is Dessner on this one too?
No, this one's only. Oh,
just Jack and Taylor. Interesting. Yeah, I think that this is another one of those songs that is sort of about the universal experience of, you know, what women go through when they break up with someone or someone starts to cheat on them or whatever. It references like forgetting to turn your location off and people wondering where you are. I really love the line about, you know, getting excited about the Starting Line playing in a bar, but then somebody being too young to understand like really what that can mean to somebody. And that I like because the Starting Line, I think probably for both of us was a pretty big player in like our music interest and in the development of that. And so because of our age, we can like really kind of call back to when you hear the Starting Line in a bar, like you're going to get excited. But there are now people that aren't going to get that.
And I know I don't want to be ageist, but I feel like if me and you were at a bar and the Starting Line came out and some young dude who was like just 21 was like, oh, the Starting Line. We'd be like, really?
Yeah.
You like the Starting For sure. Line? Okay.
For sure. Sit down.
Sit down. Grandma and grandpa want to dance here. All right. I got heavy feels on this one. I'm going to get you back. All one word.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, heavy feels are just, I like this song, but what the fuck, Taylor, whether I'm going to be your wife or smash up your bike. Like, this is like, look what you made me do, only slower. Like, she's kind of vicious in some of these lyrics. Like, I would not fuck with Taylor Swift. And I don't know where your head's at, honey. Do you want to marry me or do you want to kill me? Like, what, where are you? What are you thinking? What do I need to do to get?
Sure. It's really funny that, like, the female, what I perceive as female empowerment or female rage or female love or whatever, you're like, oh, I don't want to fuck with Taylor Swift. So it's just interesting to like.
I feel she's entitled to smash up a bike if that's the situation. I just like to be like, I don't know what I want to do. Do I want to marry you or do I want to destroy you?
But she's going to find out.
Oh, okay.
Because she knows that he's like been waiting to talk to her and hang out with her.
This is a preemptive. Like,
yeah,
I thought this was like you've been with this person for like years. And
no,
she's like,
no, what am I feeling today? No. That is a really funny perception of this song.
What moon am I in today? Get ready.
No, because I think I know that there's a line in there about like seeing this person at a bar and, you know, figuring out when she's going to go in for it because she knows that he's been interested. But who knows where the relationship goes? Like, are you going to go, you know, I'll carry Underwood and key up the car and, you know, slip Beyonce the tires. Beyonce smashing cars. Or are you going to wife up? Like you just don't know when you go and approach somebody who, you know, has been interested. You're a little bit interested. Again, it tells a story.
Yeah.
Speaking of Beyonce and Taylor Swift, I read something really interesting the other day about how Beyonce takes like a communal experience and makes it very personal, and Taylor takes personal experiences and makes them very communal. And since you made that reference, I think that it's necessary to bring that up because Beyonce, you know, she makes songs about the Black female experience as a whole, but like really connects it into her life and her marriage and her relationships. And Taylor Swift, as we've already mentioned, talks about very, very personal things that have happened to her, but everybody can connect with it.
Yeah.
And I just thought that that was a really astute way to think about Beyonce and Taylor Swift, since, you know, both their albums just came out. People compare them a lot.
Have you listened to the new Beyonce?
Oh, yes.
What, you like it?
Oh, yes.
I need to give another listen. I didn't hate it, but her last two albums were great. Like, I know her dance one was really fun. I'm like, all right, I see the country and I see what she's doing. I don't know if I like it yet, but I only listened to it once, so I need to go back.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Moving on to, honestly, one of my favorite songs on both albums, The Albatross.
Great.
I fucking love this song. I love the way she like colors a new picture of what's happening with the verse and the chorus, because it's sung differently. Like, one's kind of like poetry. The next one's like actually singing, like sing song.
Yeah.
And I really just, I appreciate it. The lyrics were really good. Just her vocal stylings in this were killing it.
Yeah, I agree. This is a really beautiful song. Again, very, very personal about how she comes off in the media, and how people are always warned about her. I think probably specifically men. But yeah, this is a beautiful song. I really enjoyed this one too. I'm going to have to give this one a second and third and fourth listen though.
All right. Chloe or Sam or Sophia or Marcus. I didn't like this song. And maybe it's beautiful, but I think by this part of the album, double album, I'm a bit burnt out on the slow songs unless they're really doing something for me.
Sure.
And this one did nothing for me, so it just felt like it's dragged on, in my opinion.
I agree. I did not like the song. It's been a skip for me since I started listening to the album. I gave it a solid try, and then at my second listen to the full album, I just skipped right over it because I don't... I just don't get it. Like, I get the other songs, you know.
All right, so track 21. We're on 21, guys. How did it end? I just complained about being over slow songs, but I really like this one. The lyrics read like a deep, or this one is one that was like, all right, this is poetry, and I don't completely understand everything she's getting at, but the way it flows and the way she's presenting it is absolutely stunning.
Agreed. Absolutely. So this, I think, is actually a really nice follow up to The Albatross, because it speaks specifically to like when she has relationships end. People are always just like, oh, that's too bad it ended. But how did it end? Like, what happened? What's the drama? What's the tea? And that's how things go. Like, you know, even if you're talking with a friend about a breakup or a difficult situation at work or what have you, like, there's really no delving into caring for another person and their feelings. I think that this might be the song where she talks about a lot of like empathic behavior and how it's sort of missing or it's faked sometimes. And it's true, because it's not always about, again, caring for the other person, but it's more about, well, tell me what's going on, or like, tell me what happened. Was there a big fight? You know, did somebody throw a stapler at you? Like, you know, that sort of thing. And it's about the details and not so much about how it's impacting a person.
Track 22. So High School.
I love this song so much. Danny knows this. And I think I love it so much because it sounds so much to me like the Sundays. And I was obsessed with the Sundays in like the late 90s, I guess, even though they had recorded a lot of those albums before I actually got excited about them. But this is just such a cute and honest love song. And every single word in this song just reminds me of exactly how relationships went in high school.
I also really fucking love this song. I love that there's actual guitar and real drums. Like, there's a drum set playing, and it's not just like an electronic drum beat behind her. It feels like she's at like a high school prom singing this, and there's like a little, like, you know, those kids in high school that start a band. Like, not that the drums or guitar sound bad, but it sounds like it's almost recorded that way.
It's very simple.
Yeah.
But it's very, very effective. And I mean, this is the Travis Kelce song. And, you know, he freaks out on the Eras tour. If you watch some of the videos from that, when she changes the line of karma to what does she say? Karma is the lyric is karma is the guy on the screens coming straight home to me. And she changes it to karma is the guy on the Chiefs coming straight home to me. So I can't even imagine how red his face is going to get if she sings this live, because it's very clearly taken from their relationship. And as a person who is chronically online, what I love about this song is that she was clearly there with all of us as we were watching their relationship unfold. The Marry, Kiss, Kill thing is from an interview that Travis did with some random news station, probably like 10 or 12 years ago, because he, you know, he says that he would kiss Taylor Swift. She's talking about spinning the bottle. She's talking about, you know, the impression of his dad, and Travis does a lot of impressions of his dad. I just love this so much because I feel like this is a song that makes all of the pain that we have heard about through the previous 21 songs just feel like it's okay now.
Like, we're in a safe place.
Yeah. Like, things are good. I know what love is now. And if I may, when she was referring to somebody like stealing all of her youth or giving all of her youth away for free, making a song that's called So High School is giving her back that youth. And aww, how beautiful is that for her?
I love it. Track 23, I Hate It Here. So this song, same. You what?
Same.
I don't know why, but this song gives me huge red vibes. It's not a bad guitar picking makes it more dreamy than most of the other slow songs. It's fine, but it just gives me red. Like, I feel like it could have been a B-side to Red.
Absolutely. I really like this song a lot. I think it's just beautiful. It's sort of like, it's lullaby-ish. But in a way of like, I got to get out of here. Like, I got to find an escape for what I'm experiencing. And again, that's one of those sort of universal experiences, I think, for everybody. And, you know, especially post pandemic, everybody uses the phrase, I hate it here, all the time. Yeah. Just wanting to kind of like practice this escapism. And for her to put that in a song like this, I think was just great.
Track 24. Thank you, Amy. The shade. I like this one. I don't completely understand all the references to Kim Kardashian. I do see the whole making, like, referencing a bully in high school, just making your life a living hell. Like, I know I read a few about like the stomping over a grave, and then she references that in a past song about my career is dead here. Here's the tombstone or something like that. Mm-hmm. What else you got for me?
I should have made notes about all the direct references, but obviously in the song title, the letters K-I-M are capitalized. Yes. So it's relatively clear that this is about Kim Kardashian and the harm that she has continually caused to Taylor. And maybe continually is actually the wrong word, but I think that like the ongoing trauma of the situation that happened, not only when Kanye, you know, interrupted her during the VMA awards speech, but then continued into his song. And I'm sorry, I don't know the title of it, but where he references making that bitch famous, talking about Taylor Swift. And there's, you know, a naked wax figurine of her in the music video that Kim released a phone call of Taylor approving that, but then it came out later that Kim had actually edited the recording of that phone call. And forget the fact that she edited it, she also recorded a phone call without telling somebody and then released it very, very publicly. And this caused Taylor to effectively like go into hiding for most of, I believe it was 2016, right before she came out with Reputation. And so I think that caused Taylor a lot of trauma, and she's still working through that. And honestly, who knows behind the scenes whether Kim is like still trying to like stitch up the wounds that were caused or like what's going on. Honestly, this whole situation with Kim Kardashian just really pisses me off because she's got a misogynistic ex-husband sitting there just like waiting to be the scapegoat for this whole thing, where she could just like walk out and be like, my ex-husband's an asshole. Like, I did this because we were assholes together. I got past that. Let's all get past this together and just move on. But she refuses to do that for whatever reason.
I saw a thing online where someone's like, you have no proof that she edited the recording. And like you said, you shouldn't be recording a phone conversation anyways. And then like Taylor Swift was young. She's not going to approve a naked wax figure of herself in a music video.
Yeah. Well, so my understanding is that it was about the lyric and the song, not about the music video. So I think that that was another just kind of like dig in this whole feud between her and Kanye that then Kim decided to involve herself with.
Go Kim.
Yeah. But, you know, the song, I really like the song. I like that it comes right after high school because it's very much about a bully and how this person just like continues to sort of ruin their life. And I really love the lyric about, you know, like everybody knowing that her mom's a saint, but her mom wished that this bully was dead. And I don't know, I can identify with that because all my friends really love my mom, but my mom, ooh, she would get so mad when somebody was mean to me.
All right. Track 25. I look in people's windows. First off, Taylor, that's illegal. Kind of voyeuristic. Like she talks about hoping he looks at her through the window in this like golden glowing living room. But also the rest of my notes were just like, I like when I'm going on a walk and I could see in someone's house. And if I could get away with it, I would just sit and stare and look into someone else's
Another
eye.
Common experience. We are all voyeurs in one way or another.
Seriously, when you're on a walk and you could see what someone's watching on TV and they're sitting there like, you know, I just want to see what's going on.
I know. Absolutely. I really like this song a lot. I remember I was listening to it one morning while I was like getting ready for work. And I just felt it was really beautiful. I don't know that I have more to say about that.
So the next song is The Prophecy, which is the name of the wine that I brought over for Nikki tonight. It's a rosé, The Prophecy. So in this one, she's like, not a Greek goddess, but some sort of goddess that's doomed to always be alone. And that's what I took from it. I don't know. Did she write this before Travis is what I said? It kind of feels like... Or I kind of really dig this one. I just don't know how I feel about the lyrics.
Yeah, my guess is that she did. Because this is all about, you know, like sort of waiting for that moment when a relationship is going to stick. And that she constantly felt like she had been through that. You know, I think this is the song where she writes a lyric about, you know, Eve being ruined by the apple. Yep.
About the bite.
Yes.
She references like snakes and like poison and how she can never hold anything for too long or something like that. And I'm like, I think it's because a lot of this second half seems more upbeat and it's like going after other parts of her life. But love seems to be more on an uptick here. Mm-hmm. So Travis, I'm assuming. And I'm like, oh, no, why is this a sad song again?
Oh, sure. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, I think that this is just a sort of about her being destined to be alone because of her fame and because of what she brings to a relationship, because she's the albatross. And she's just really hoping that she can figure out some way to talk to someone who can change that prophecy for her.
I'm cursed. Someone love me.
Yeah. Lucky for her, this football player made a friendship bracelet and the rest is history.
All right. Cassandra, I want to know your opinion on this song first. Track 27, Cassandra.
So admittedly, this is probably the song that I've listened to the least, so I'm not sure that I have a lot of opinions on it. I do know that it's a little bit about the Greek mythology around Cassandra, and but I admittedly just haven't dug too deep into it, so I'm not even going to try.
I knew because this is one of my favorite songs on the second half of the album. And it's because it plays out like folklore where she's telling a story of someone else and this trauma they're going through and like getting hung, Cassandra, or she gets burned or something like
that. That's also why I don't like folklore. So,
but that's why I like it because I like Taylor's self-reflective songs, but I really like when she tells like the story of who she, it's not her. And this, I thought the song was awesome, just like the lyrics. And I was like, I bet Nikki didn't like the song as much. Because you didn't like folklore at first. I had to like...
Well, maybe that's why I've only listened to it once. We're going to have to do a part two where you do a second listen to the first half and I do a second listen to the second half.
All right. Track 28, Peter. Not a fan of this one. She does something that most artists do that she doesn't do. I realize she doesn't do that often and I realize I hate it and I don't want her to ever do it again. She repeats the chorus four times or three times. Oh, like, okay. It's like two verses or two lines. And she is like a wordsmith, like she's a lyricist, she's a poet, and she never like repeats herself over and over. And this chorus is all the chorus is just two lines over and over and over. And I'm like,
yeah,
well, Taylor, you're better than that.
Yeah, I think to some extent on this whole album, and I'm going to hate myself for saying this, but she needed an editor. You know, I have heard the story where All Too Well was originally like 22 minutes long or something like that. But she was writing with somebody else at that point, and they got her down to the original 5 minutes, and then she released the 10 minute version. But anyway, yeah, I think that this song, she does repeat herself a lot. I really loved how it kind of called back to Cardigan, because in Cardigan, she talks about Peter losing Wendy. So I don't wonder if this is sort of about the same person. And
I'm going to like the song more.
Well, I have some ideas about what's going on here. Because like I had said earlier, she and Maddie had met in 2014. And I think that potentially what happened is he said, let's get together when I grow up a little bit. I think the 1975 was probably like just kind of getting started at that time. They had crossed paths, but she was getting really big and they were still sort of struggling. And so I don't wonder if this is about him. She also, there is sort of this this famous clip of her during an Eras tour show, where she draws a heart in the air and says, or she mouths, "This one's for you. You know who you are. I love you." And Maddie happened to be at that show, and he had just done the same thing at a 1975 show like a week earlier. Wow. I don't know what song that was about, because I really don't like that band, but so I have a feeling that this is yet another ratty song.
Track 29, The Bolter. Mm-hmm. The song is all right, but I don't know. I mean, it does tell kind of a fictional story, like what I liked about Cassandra.
Yeah.
But it didn't hit me as hard as Cassandra.
Yeah, I agree. This one does also tell a story about a little girl that falls in the ice, and then, you know, she kind of moves throughout her life quickly trying to escape something.
Yeah.
This was one of those songs where I got to the point on the second half of the album where I was like, okay, now all these songs sound very similar. So yeah, I don't know if, you know, her and Jack and Aaron need to work together as like a threesome more often, because this album feels very divided.
It does.
Between Jack and Aaron. I think that maybe this song in particular might have benefited from a little bit more of that synth pop vibe. That's about somebody running away. Like, that's not a slow burn kind of thing. You know, that's a very like quick action.
All right. Track 30, Robin. So I should like this song. It highlights tigers, dinosaurs, trampolines, and fireflies, but it's just kind of a boring song to me.
This song was so random. I cannot put together a theme in this song for the life of me.
Again, maybe this is like the poetry we don't understand, so, and it doesn't hit us as hard, but
maybe
I don't know.
Maybe it's because I don't know Aristotle.
All right. Finally, the last track, The Manuscript.
Yes.
And I feel like you have a lot of opinions on this one, so I'm going to go quick. I took this as a song about letting someone go and watching them raise a family with someone else. And you're not the main character of that storyline, though you felt like you were, and you're just watching another story play out. But I'd love to hear your theories, because I know you have some.
All right. So this song is also very similar to, you know, So Long London, All Too Well, etc. And the thing about this song is you have to read the prologue to this whole album before you listen to this song.
Where do you find that?
It's written somewhere. I think it was in the insert in the CDs.
Oh, well.
Where she like essentially says, you know, this is all of my tortured poetry based on a time in my life that was very harmful, was really sad, was really exciting in a lot of ways. But like, this is all of the quote unquote poetry that I wrote during that time. And now I'm closing the book on it, giving it to you as the listener. And it's a closed chapter for me. And the manuscript is taking all of that and like putting it into a song. So I don't think that it's just about one specific person and watching them move on. I think that it's about watching everybody who was in her life at some point and closing the chapter on what happened with her prior to, I don't know, probably like May or June of this year, closing that book and moving on. Because the last line of the song is specifically that, this is not mine anymore. And she says in the first part, I write the worst men the best, or something to that extent. I think that is, you know, and there's lines in But Daddy, I Love Him about time giving a lot of perspective. And it will be very interesting based on the manuscript and, you know, the other written pieces of this album that she's put out there, to see how this quote unquote era plays into her whole career. Because I do think that this is about a very clear snippet in time for her that she's ready to be done with. And if you watch the Fortnite music video, at the end, there's all of these pages that have been written on fire, just like surrounding her. And she's talked about how in that music video, there's so many themes throughout the whole album that play out in that music video. And I think she decided to write this all down, set it on fire, and then leave it with us.
Yeah.
So that like we are now tortured about all of this stuff and you know, want to know about what's going on. But the manuscript is just like a perfect closing to this album, because as chaotic or boring or, you know, too synthy or too melodic or however you want to call the whole album, like it was just her trauma dumping, and it's what she needed. And she talked about that at the Grammys. She's like, I really, really needed to write this album. As sort of like a cathartic experience for myself. And the manuscript is just, it's closing that book. I think this will be a very, very short era for her. None of these songs I don't think can really be performed
live.
I think she might do them as some of the acoustic set secret songs, but I don't see this having like, you know, its whole section as part of the Eras tour when that kicks back up in a couple weeks.
All right. Well, that's the album. I'm glad we got to run through that. It's funny because I was like, oh, we'll just do short snippets or talk about each song real quickly. We still hit an hour.
I have a lot to say.
No, it's funny. Where would you rank this out of her albums now?
So it's hard because I have recency bias. But this is probably the album that I'm going to listen to the most for the next month or two. I think that long term, it's probably in the top three for me.
Okay.
Definitely top five. Top three, along with Reputation and Midnights.
All right. Fair enough. Well, thank you for being on the podcast with me today.
You're welcome.
It's been great. you can find Nikki at... No, I'm not gonna... stay tuned. And this week we'll have more episodes for you. But thanks and bye. Say bye.
Bye. Oh, sorry. Goodbye.